seconds, 2 seconds. Riddell all the way outside to Watford. Three on the way. Oh! It went in! He puts it up on the left hand. No good. Tipped up. And no good again. Batted away. Tipped into Cody. Indiana's going to win it. They win it.
Yogi Ferrell. Will he take the big shot? Bryant is trying to post. It's Yogi. It's three. Got him all!
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news, notes, and nods to the past. I am your host, Jared Morris, and as always, Podcast on the Brink is a joint production of The Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. And if you haven't yet subscribed to The Assembly Call podcast, make sure that you do so soon so that you're ready when the season starts. Our post-game show podcasts are always ready the morning after every IU game. Subscribe on iTunes by going to assemblycall.com/iTunes or simply search for Assembly Call in your podcast player of choice and you will find us. And another great way to make sure that you're ready for the season is to join the Inside the Hall Premium Discussion Forum. If you like informed, passionate, and civil discussion of IU basketball, then the Inside the Hall Forum is the place for you. Join now at forum.insidethehall.com. Alrighty, well, this is episode number 144 of Podcast on the Brink, and we dedicate this episode to the 144 free throw attempts that this IU legend had during his senior season in Bloomington. It was one of the most decorated senior seasons by any Hoosier ever. Do you have a guess who I'm referring to yet? Stick around to the end of the episode to find out. And on today's episode, Alex and I have two guests who will help us project what IU's newest commitment for the class of 2017, Clifton Moore from Philadelphia, will bring once he arrives on campus next year. Our very own Ryan Carraza of Inside the Hall joins us first to dissect how Moore's skill set and physical profile fit with the way basketball is evolving. And then Josh Verlin, the editor-in-chief of cityofbasketballlove.com, joins us to break down Clifton's game and his rapid rise from off the radar to Indiana commitment. First, real quick, I want to say a few words about our sponsor, SeatGeek. You know, as we've been talking about here on previous episodes of Podcast on the Brink, buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show that you want to go to, and none of the older ticket sites really seem to want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. This is why I use them personally. They've come along and they've created an amazing app and website that really does make it easier than ever before for fans to buy and sell tickets, whether you're going to the next IU football game or looking ahead to get tickets for IU basketball games, because they're on SeatGeek now too. For me, it's the first place I go when I'm looking for tickets for a game or concert. I've got the app on my phone. I'll also use it on my desktop, and it works great. And the reason why is because SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. They do the work. You save the time and money. That sounds like a pretty good equation to me, don't you think? Okay. So here's the thing. The best part about this is that Podcast on the Brink listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. And the way that works is download the SeatGeek app, or you can do this on their website. Go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, and then add the promo code Brink, B-R-I-N-K, and SeatGeek will then send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So again, download the SeatGeek app or go to the website SeatGeek.com, enter the promo code B-R-I-N-K today. Alrighty, and here is my conversation with Alex Bozich and Ryan Carraza, followed by Alex and I talking with Josh Verlin of cityofbasketballlove.com right now on Podcast on the Brink. All righty. Well, big news for Indiana over the weekend as Clifton Moore, a recruit from the Philadelphia area, committed to Indiana. And we're going to talk with that commitment or about that commitment with Ryan Carraza here from Inside the Hall. Ryan, welcome. It's always good to talk to you.
Pleasure to be here, Jared.
So you had an interesting tweet after Clifton's commitment. And I think it's interesting, especially within the context of some people being a little bit concerned about this recruitment simply because of the number of stars by Clifton Moore's name. You know, he's a guy who went from kind of off the radar to now generating a lot of buzz. And obviously now he's an Indiana commitment. And so people are looking at him more. But, you know, he seems to be another one of these recruits that Tom Crean is targeting that may not have the level of stars, you know, may have come along a little bit slower as a high school player, but has that physical profile where it really seems like he has a big ceiling. And your tweet, you said, near seven-footers with perimeter skills are the future. It will be a thrill to watch Moore develop under the Indiana staff. You sound pretty bullish on Clifton Moore. Why are you so excited about his future as a Hoosier?
Well, I think kind of looking at it in the bigger picture sense, you know, Tom Crean, he's been able to get in McDonald's All-Americans. I think this current class breaks a streak of, I think it was five straight years he had a McDonald's All-American and kind of a five-star guys. And I think the interesting thing about what the staff is doing as they're going about some of their recruitment is they're targeting players that they maybe feel they can turn into a five-star. And so then it becomes where, yes, they're going to get, you know, guys that are ranked five-star, you know, while they're in high school. But I think as a program, they've really shown a great ability to target some under-the-radar guys and say, they have everything that they need, and we know as a staff, and you know, Tom Crean has been so great with player development throughout his tenure at Indiana, that they believe that if they can bring in a guy that has all the tools and the skill sets necessary to develop under their program, that's almost just as great as getting a guy that's ranked as a five star. And with specifically with Moore, what I find interesting is they haven't really had a player that's this big with perimeter skills. I mean, you can go back to like a Vonleh and maybe even Cody Zeller a little bit, but I think this guy, more so than them, has kind of some more perimeter leanings. And at his size, it'll just, I think, be really interesting to see what the staff can do with him and really what he can develop into as he comes to campus.
Yeah, you know, we saw Vonleh, you know, get a chance to kind of step out and shoot a little bit, although he played more in the post. And Cody, you know, never really got to kind of show off that, you know, his perimeter skills. He played a lot more down low. It'll be interesting this year to see how much Thomas Bryant faces the basket, because we saw him play a lot with his back to the basket as a freshman. But we saw him hit a couple three-pointers, too, you know, and show some of those skills, and I'm sure he'll want to do that for the NBA. How do you see a guy like Clifton Moore fitting in, you know, with Tom Crean's system and with how he wants to play?
Well, I think, you know, and you bring up Bryant's a good case, too. And even going back with Vonleh, I remember the first time when I talked with him at McDonald's on American Media Day, he said one of the reasons he committed is because he saw the big men doing guard drills, right? He saw Cody Zeller going through some perimeter drills and some dribbling drills. And, I mean, we even saw it last year, you know, Juwan Morgan playing, you know, he had a little stint at point guard. And Crean really, in his practices and something Alex has observed and has written about and is known with Crean as well, is that he makes his players basketball players. He's not just like, okay, you're a traditional big man and you're only going to work on the post and you're only going to work on rebounding. They're allowed to work on like a full tool set of skills as a player. And so when you do that, if you know, kind of aggregating that out to Moore, if he's, you know, in the system and doing what other guys of his size have done under Crean, it makes a rotation and makes it everything very interchangeable, right? If he needs for defensive purposes, I mean, you can switch around a lot if they want to do some switching and maybe not lose much or get beat off the dribble, even if he's got a smaller guy on him. But at the same token, he can play a little bigger and guard big guys if he needs to. And then offensively, it's just, I remember you used the term a matchup nightmare for Christian Watford all those years ago. And I think a guy like this is kind of the next level of that because of his size. And yeah, if he can step out and hit shots and he can move off the perimeter, it's just a really hard, tough cover when you're that size and you have those skills.
Yeah, one of the things I find interesting about this, and, you know, I've kind of ingrained myself in the, you know, obviously the premium forum and the comments on the site. So I'm reading, you know, emails, tweets, I'm getting all these reactions from fans. And, you know, there's skepticism out there saying, you know, that for every Oladipo or for every OG, there's a Tim Prill or a Jeremiah April. And the one thing I'll point out in this specific situation that feels like it's different or looks like it's different is, you have to remember on Priller in April, those were spring signings where Indiana pretty much needed to fill a roster space. This is a little different in the fact of this kid had 22 scholarship offers. It's the fall, so you know this isn't really the time where a school is going to take a chance on a kid and just offer a scholarship if they don't really feel like it's someone that they really want. So I would say the difference there, mainly from the those who are criticizing the pickup from a recruiting perspective, or you know this kid's not highly ranked enough. Just kind of look at, you know, when some of the guys who they've picked up that haven't worked out, those have typically been when they needed to fill a spot or last minute pickups. So you know that's kind of my observation of this whole situation from the standpoint of, you know, whether is this kid good enough to play at Indiana? Because ultimately, I think he's going to work out.
You know, and I believe there are some other reasons, too, why he was maybe under the radar. You know, because of the AAU team that he played with, and he had a big growth spurt. You know, and it's also possible, and Ryan, I'll be curious to get your thoughts on this, that maybe just kind of the profile that Clifton Moore is, as a physical profile and the skills he brings to the table, may still be a little bit undervalued. You know, as you said, near seven-footers with perimeter skills are the future. And so maybe it's just a case where the recruiting rankings, you know, need to kind of catch up with where basketball is headed and how valuable a guy like this can be, where even if, you know, he needs to gain some strength and defensively he struggles a little bit, from an offensive perspective, what he brings, it's really tantalizing.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, and this kind of goes to the larger philosophy of really, you know, how Tom Crean runs this program is he's a constant studier of the game, and I think Indiana kind of morphing into this highly efficient offense in the sense of they only take threes and they really only shoot around the rim and they really don't shoot any long twos at all. And that's really kind of been a derivative of what's been going on in the NBA game. And I think to the Clifton Moore point as well, you know, if you look at a team like the Bucks now, they just have like size and length at every single position. And you hear about these things like these lineup of death, like the Warriors have, and some other teams have them in other fashions where their five is more like a three, right? Or a traditional four. So I think in a lot of ways, facing the basket and having guys that can switch and play multiple positions and really can beat you in a lot of different ways is in some sense where the NBA game's going a bit. And I think Crean knows that. And even if we look back to last year, Thon Maker was a guy that they were in on for a bit as well. Obviously, that situation went where it went, and he ended up he's actually on the Bucks now, which is funny that they're a team that's been going after guys like this. So, yeah, I think him knowing that and him probably studying and looking how these guys are used, even the NBA and in other leagues as well, if Crean's studying over in Europe and all that too, he's probably, you know, got some ideas of how he can work them into his system. And so that's why I think it will be pretty interesting to watch him come to play for IU.
So last question for you, Ryan. I mean, do you see any downside to this, to bringing Clifton Moore? I mean, obviously, when you look at next year and what we project to have on the roster, if guys like Thomas Bryant and OG Anunoby end up going to the NBA, you know, Indiana's going to need big guys who can step in, and maybe they don't have to play down low on offense, but certainly will be needed on defense. I mean, you'll have Daron Davis you would expect back, and you would expect Juwan Morgan back, but there's going to be a need for depth down low. Is there a risk at all in taking a guy who, you know, maybe a bit of a project, who may have to wait on for that physicality part, do you see that as a risk worth taking?
I think it's a risk worth taking, again, because if they want to kind of switch around and he's able to kind of do multiple things when he may be needed to maybe play a little bit more of a defensive position down low, you know, he can kind of switch in there and do that. And I think, you know, Morgan really proved last year what a great defender he is. And, you know, Daron Davis is coming in here with a profile of being a pretty great defender in terms of blocking shots and stuff. So, you know, you hope you have a good foundation with those two down low, and then whatever needs to fill in behind them, you know, hopefully can work out.
Excellent. Well, Ryan, we always appreciate your insight. Great to have you here on Podcast on the Brink.
All right, thank you much.
Mm-hmm. All righty, and up next, we will be talking with Josh Berlin of cityofbasketballlove.com to get even more insight on Clifton's game and his very interesting recruitment, which ended with a commitment to Indiana. So our conversation with Josh Berlin coming up next. All right, and I'm pleased to welcome in Josh Berlin of cityofbasketballlove.com with us now on Podcast on the Brink. Josh, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Really excited to be talking some basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're excited to have someone on here who can give us a really good perspective of Clifton Moore. Obviously, Clifton is Indiana's newest commitment and came as a bit of a mystery to some of us. You know, his recruitment had quite a rapid rise from off the radar to Indiana commitment. So I'd love just to start out, you know, I know that you've seen him play a decent amount of times. What kind of player is Indiana getting in Clifton Moore?
I mean, they're certainly getting someone with an unbelievably high ceiling. I think that's, you know, the first thing that comes to mind when you look at Clifton Moore is just his potential. You know, he has games where he shows flashes of it, you know, of fulfilling that potential, but just no matter what, when you look at his frame, he's 6'9", maybe 6'10", long arms, athletic. You know, he's got so much place to add strength, and, you know, that coming from a Hatboro Horsham to a, you know, an Indiana weightlifting program is going to pay dividends for him at college. He can stretch the floor. He can put the ball on the floor. He can score around the rim. He's versatile. He's, you know, he's athletic. He's got just good touch and feel. He's an intelligent kid. He's, you know, he's well spoken. He's humble. He's in, you know, he's mature. So there's a lot of very positive things about him. He's just extremely intriguing prospect that really came out of nowhere over the last 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, and, you know, I guess, you know, literally everything that I've heard about Clifton since Indiana got involved with the recruitment has just been so effusive in his skill level and his ceiling, and it almost makes me a little bit skeptical. I'm like, okay, so why is this guy so far off the radar? Like, what, can you kind of trace back his recruitment and why he went from the radar to where he is now?
And let's be clear, while I think his potential is sky high, he certainly is a long way from realizing that potential. You know, there would be games over the summer and in high school, you know, the perfect example, he goes out and drops 25 points in a district playoff game. And then the next game they go down to Chester and he had, you know, either 2 or 4 points and was just completely physically outmatched against Chester, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with Chester, but that's, you know, one of the big name programs around here, turned out numerous, you know, high-level players, really known for their toughness. Guys like Nasir Robinson, Rondae Hollis Jefferson is a Chester kid. So, you know, the biggest reason for some of that, you know, a lot of this intrigue is, yes, the potential is certainly there, but even during the summer, he would have games where he'd go out and hit 7 or 8 threes, but then another game he would go 1 for 10, and when his shot wasn't falling, it was sometimes difficult for him to have an impact on the game. So, you know, it took a while for teams to start, okay, the potential's there, you got to see a little bit of production, and then once they saw those games where he would hit, you know, a bunch of shots, score inside, block a few shots, it's very tempting, you know, as a high major school to see what could be 2 or 3 years down the road. But in terms of just the general awareness of him in the area, you know, honestly, and you know, I'm all over Philadelphia. I didn't hear about him until about midway through his junior year, and there were sort of rumblings of, oh, Hatboro's got this kid, and they were having a surprising year. And then they actually made it to the state playoff. They won 2 surprising games in the district and made it to state. And I first got to see him in March at this off-season event called the Donna Frio Classic. And, you know, I mean, again, when the kid takes the floor, he's instantly intriguing just because of his frame alone, and then he starts hitting threes. And, you know, the progression, you know, pretty quickly followed. If you look at his verbal commit page, you can kind of see, you know, Lafayette first in there, and then it just was a rocket ship.
Speaking to his recruitment, when, you know, you mentioned you just saw him back in the spring for the first time. When did from your knowledge of it, when did his recruitment really start to pick up? I know this summer some schools kind of, that's when Indiana became aware of him, but take us back to when his recruitment maybe started in terms of him getting offers and interest and kind of how it progressed over these last couple of
sure.
months.
Sure. I mean, you know, not surprisingly, like, and there's a lot of kids where this happens too, there were 2 big boosts, and that was the April live period and the July live period. You know, the April live period was when you had schools like Temple, LaSalle, George Washington, St. Joe's, you know, all the higher level local schools and some of the, you know, schools in their conferences, some of the more Northeast programs, you know, because he impressed at the Elevate Hoops events and the Hoop Group events. So that was the first one where, you know, he went from having one offer to something like 12 offers. And then really the high major jump then came in July, because those schools, you know how it works. The schools hear about them in April, and they've already got their April schedule set, but they hear about this kid that's blowing up and getting some offers, and, you know, they'll get a few reports on him in May or June. And then in July, they make him a priority to go see him, and that's why you have, you know, high major coaches flocking to the Hoop Dreams games here in Philly in July. And then that was when that next jump occurred, and he started getting some of those real high major offers and looks, you know, the Ole Miss, the Boston College, et cetera, et cetera. But what was interesting with him is the entire time, you know, Lafayette was still very much involved in his recruitment. St. Joe's was all on him all the way up until they got a commitment last week, and that was their last scholarship. You know, so even though the high major schools were coming in, he wasn't snuffing the lower schools. He was still very much kind of all over the place, and that's what made his recruitment so interesting to track over the last, you know, 6 to 8 weeks.
From your perspective, what you mentioned a high ceiling. Can you expand on maybe what kind of what you foresee the best case scenario for him as far as what he can be as a college player?
I mean, I think best case scenario, you're looking at just like a high level, you know, sort of pick and pop four combo who can, you know, obviously stretch the defense, make shots, you know, with his length, he's got a pretty good release. He doesn't need a lot of time to get his shot off, and there aren't going to be many guys that can stop him. So I think, you know, early when he's going to be effective, it'll be as a guy who can come in, trail the break, and knock down shots. But ultimately, again, if he's realizing this potential to start to put the ball on the floor, one dribble pull-up, you know, and really just be a huge mismatch problem. So you could put him out there as a 6'9" three-man who can hit shots, and, you know, if he gets put on a smaller defender, or if somebody they put a larger four or even a five on him, he's somebody that can take that guy off the dribble, you know. But again, someone, if he has a smaller wing on him, you can post him up. I mean, he really is super versatile in that way. So I think, you know, best case scenario, you're looking at someone who can, you know, come in, stretch the floor, but then also do more than just knock down some shots, create for himself a little bit, and also on the defensive end, you know, guard threes, guard fours, guard fives. There's a lot of potential there with him for sure.
Josh, one of the interesting things when I talked to Cliff right after he committed that he mentioned to me was he stayed with his Hoop Dreams AAU program, which quite frankly I'd never heard of. You know, I've been to the EYBL events, I've been to Under Armour, I've been to Adidas, so I know those programs. He did mention to me that Team Final had kind of reached out wanting him to play with them, and I heard a rumor that there was another maybe EYBL team that had mentioned. How different do you think his recruitment would look at this, you know, going into the fall if he would have played on the EYBL circuit as opposed to playing with a local AAU program?
Well, I mean, look, you know, we all know that when you play for an EYBL, you know, you play on the EYBL or the Under Armour circuit, you're going to get a lot of luck. So I certainly think he would have had more colleges on his recruitment. That being said, you know, I was at his team's games all summer, especially in July, and there were plenty of high major coaches there. I don't want to specifically name names because, to be honest, I saw a lot of games this summer and it all kind of melted together a little bit, but, you know, the coaches turned out. So he, through his April, he got word, got out about how good he was and his potential. And so what all that comes down to is I'm not sure, maybe sure he would have gotten 7 or 8 other offers, but are they from programs that would have ultimately pursued him and made him a number one target? I'm not so sure about that. You know, we all know there's plenty of schools that offer 15 or 20 kids and they like to get their name out there. And then if the kid shows interest, you know, maybe the program will reciprocate, but it's a little different, you know, than having a program that offers you and then also makes you a priority. So, but kind of going back to your point about, you know, that he didn't leave Hoop Dreams, I think kind of shows what kid he is, because he also stayed at Hatboro-Horsham, which, let's be honest, is not a basketball powerhouse in an area where you've got easily 15 to 20 schools that could be pretty much described as state contenders on a year-in, year-out basis, many of them private schools that, he could have transferred to had he wanted to go at some point in the last few years. So the fact that he didn't do that, the fact that he stayed with Hoop Dreams, which is, you know, just a local mom-and-pop AAU program run by a guy named John Michaels, You know, his son plays on the team, that kind of team. For him to do that, for him to still consider schools like Lafayette, even as the high majors came in, I think that all just shows his personality, and he's not someone who is just instantly going to jump at the highest opportunity.
So how has the competition level been that he's played? I mean, obviously we know that Philly has a great reputation for basketball, and he's getting a chance to play teams like Chester, as you mentioned, but on a kind of a weekly basis, is he playing, you know, pretty tough teams that are going to help him grow, or is the competition going to be quite a jump once he gets to...
Yeah, the competition's going to be a jump. I mean, that's for sure. You know, like, you know, when he played against Chester, he struggled with the physicality, and they're a very physical team, but again, it's nowhere near Michigan State or, you know, one of those kind of teams in the Big Ten, in Iowa, et cetera. So I think, and without knowing exactly Indiana's roster, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a fairly young roster at this point, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So my assumption is that a redshirt year would be very much expected, anticipated. I would be surprised if he's ready. It's going to be a huge jump. I mean,
Crean doesn't redshirt. He's very, very loath to redshirt.
Interesting. I would be surprised. Then I'll say this. I'd be surprised if he has a very large role right away.
Yeah.
You know, I think he has the ability to hit shots, but I just think he could really struggle from a physicality standpoint in the league. And just having not played, you know, that high level of basketball, you know, day in and day out, I think it will be a transition for him. You know, I'm not saying it's a transition he can't make, but I certainly think that it's going to be a little bit of an eye-opener for sure.
It's interesting. You know, OG Anunoby was a guy who came in last year, and a lot of people were wondering about a red shirt and feeling like he might need to red shirt to be ready. And by the end of the season, he was playing great. You know, whether that's just a testament to him or to the player development of the staff, hopefully that's something with Clifton that could repeat itself. You know, one thing, Josh, you know, now that Clifton is committed.
Not to interrupt, but yeah. I think that's the thing is, like, it's just a big unknown, you know, because he is still so new to the process. I mean, a year ago, nobody knew who he was, and now he's going to Indiana. He's going to have a lot of attention on him now his senior year. So, you know, I think we'll know a lot more about how ready he is by the end of his senior year, because if now, you know, and I haven't really gotten the chance to speak with him since his commitment, if the fact that he's now going to Indiana and realizing how good he could be sort of helps flip that switch to, okay, you need to be in the gym every day and you need to really be working and adding muscle and taking this, you know, really like a full-time job, because that's what it's going to be. Then by the end of his senior year, he could be a lot further along on that progression, to the point where we're saying, like, okay, now he is ready to come in and play right away as a freshman. So I think, you know, because of how quickly this all happened, we need to see how quickly he then sort of adjusts to the new expectations of, you know, high major Big Ten level basketball.
You know, now that he's committed, Indiana fans are going to be following along with his senior season, because that's just what we do. You know, what do you think Indiana fans should look for? I know you mentioned before, it sounds like consistency may be an issue. You know, 20 points one night and, you know, 2 to 4 points the next night. Is that the kind of thing IU fans should look at to see if he's kind of progressing as a senior? Anything else that you think would be good to pay attention to, just to see how he's progressing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's tough because you can't always watch the games, right? So if you see, he only scored 6 points on this night, well, you don't know if that was the shot not falling or was it not in the game plan. I should add, they do have a very good senior guard. It had a fellow named Jay Davis, you know, more of a small college player, but a very talented scorer. So there are going to be nights where Jay can take over and some of the other guys will chip in and Clifton isn't as needed. But I certainly think looking for more consistency, you know, especially against some of the bigger name programs, in the area, let me see if their schedule's online and I can kind of give you an idea. Should have pulled this up beforehand, but consistency. And then if you do have a chance to watch any of their games, doesn't look like there's a schedule up yet. If you do get a chance to watch any of their games, you know, is he just standing around the perimeter and taking shots, or is he being more active? Is he posting up? Is he getting in the lane a little bit? Is he hitting a one dribble pull up? So those sorts of things, rather than just, you know, floating around the perimeter and shooting threes.
Yeah. So another guy that Indiana has been mentioned with is a guard from out there, David Beatty. What can you tell us about him and what kind of player he is and where his recruitment stands right now?
Yeah, he's an interesting one for sure. I mean, at this point, his offer list is probably 30 schools long, and there's just a lot of, you know, he's one of those players that just appeals to a lot of programs. He's tough. He's 6'3". He's muscular, about 200 pounds. You know, he can create his own shot. He can create for others. He plays hard all the time. He's kind of that typical Philly guard. You know, he's got a little bit of that attitude, that edge, but, you know, that's kind of what drives him. You know, one of those players who always feels like he's a little disrespected and kind of uses that to his advantage. He's now back at Imhotep Charter in Philadelphia. He spent last year at St. Benedict's in New Jersey, and that seemed to do just a ton for his game, for his confidence. But then, I mean, you know, he's got all these schools that have been all over him. He cut his list. This is a problem when you cover, you know, 90 schools. Kind of forget where everybody's at. But he's just a very talented combo guard in general, and he hasn't given a lot of hints as to what he's really looking for. So I'm, you know, one of those kids keeping everybody in the dark a little bit, but, you know, he's got Indiana, Maryland, UCLA, Georgetown, Temple, LaSalle, and UConn are his final group.
Yeah. Well, I mean, from the way you describe it.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's a versatile group, but everybody likes tough guards that can score.
Yeah, no, from the way you describe him, he sounds like a guy that would be a great addition. So we'll have to see how that recruitment goes. And one final question for you. I know you mentioned before we started recording that you've got a chance to see Al Durham play a couple times. Obviously, Al and Clifton will be teaming up in IU's class of 2017. Any impressions from what you saw from Al?
Well, that was going to be my last thing about David is I think maybe – I wonder if he would want to go to Indiana, considering I think he and Durham have, you know, some similar qualities. They're both shooting guards. They're both athletic. Durham's, a little more athletic, a little more of a high flyer than Beatty, who, not that he's unathletic, but you know, Durham can really get up. But yeah, I got a chance to see him this summer at the Oladipo camp at the Matha, and he was on. He had everything working for him that night, really good pull-up game in transition, just a super confident scorer. Played, you know, not arrogant, but just kind of knew that he could get his shot, knew that he could get buckets, was hitting tough layups, you know, some reverses, hit a few threes. He was very impressive. And he was playing with a football, style mouth guard because he'd actually just gotten stitches around his mouth. So it kind of added to the whole toughness aspect of him for sure. But, he can really go.
Wow, very nice. That's a good. That's encouraging to hear.
Yeah, he's got a lot of upside, and he looks like a kid who's going to come in and contribute right away. Again, depending on Indiana's needs at the two position.
Yeah. All right. Well, Josh, this has been great, man. We really appreciate you coming on the show and giving us some insight that's that we obviously can only get from someone who has seen Clifton play as much as you have. So we really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Hopefully I was helpful. I really appreciate it coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, the site is cityofbasketballlove.com.
Absolutely.
They have a bunch of pieces already up about Clifton, so we'll link to you in the show notes so people can go there and get more.
Appreciate it. And we'll definitely have a season preview on Hatboro, and we'll be tracking him throughout the whole year.
Oh, excellent. That'd be great.
Appreciate it, Josh. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Josh.
Have a good one. Bye.
All right. Our thanks to guests Ryan Carrazza and Josh Verlin for joining us on this episode of Podcast on the Brink. One more quick reminder, make sure that you go to assemblycall.com/iTunes to subscribe to the Assembly Call podcast or search Assembly Call on your podcast player of choice. And go to forum.insidethehall.com to get signed up for the premium Inside the Hall forum so that you are ready when the season begins. All righty. Well, I told you at the beginning of this episode, episode number 144, that it was dedicated to the 144 free throw attempts that this IU legend had during his senior season. And I am speaking, of course, about the legendary Kent Benson, by any measure, one of the 5-10 greatest Hoosiers of all time. And that senior season, as I said, it was one of the most epic, one of the most decorated senior seasons in Indiana history. And as we read here from the press guide, to give you some background on Benson's senior season, in 1977, Kent Benson returned for his senior season after winning the 1976 NCAA championship game, of course, and being named the NCAA Finals MVP. He was the MVP of the Final Four. And in his final year of 1977, Benson, the 6'11 center, he grabbed a total of 241 rebounds, which brought his career total to 1,031, a mark that ranks third in school history and 10th in Big Ten history. He averaged 10.5 rebounds a game during his senior season. He led a 16-11 Hoosier squad. They were 11-7 in Big Ten play in rebounds and blocks. In addition, he was selected as the Big Ten's 1977 MVP. Benson earned All-America and first-team All-Big Ten honors for the third consecutive season, and I believe the Helms Foundation named him the National Player of the Year as well. He was also selected to the Academic All-America team and the Academic All-Big Ten teams for the second straight season. Now, obviously, that season, the 1977 season, didn't go quite as well from a team perspective, from a victories perspective, as Benson's previous two seasons did. But my goodness, were those huge seasons, the 75 and 76 season, during which Benson's Indiana teams lost one game, a grand total of one game. And of course, Kent was nicknamed Big Red for his recognizable red hair, and indeed, part of one of the most amazing periods of Indiana basketball. And I chuckled when I read this in the press guide. It says, after an average 1973-74 season, the Hoosiers took the world by storm in 1974-75. Well, let's put that in perspective, right? Because in the 73-74 season, the Hoosiers still finished 12-2 in the Big Ten, and they tied for the conference championship with Michigan. But because only the conference champion went to the NCAA tournament at that time, Indiana and Michigan played in a one-game playoff to see who would get to the NCAA tournament. Michigan won that game, although Indiana would get their payback against Michigan in 1976, of course. And so Indiana ended up going to another tournament, wasn't it? The Collegiate Commissioners Association tournament, which invited second-place teams from eight conferences to participate. This was Indiana's only appearance in the CCAT, and of course, they won the championship. But that 23-5 team that was 12-2 in the Big Ten, ranked in the top 10 for most of the year. I guess for that era, that could be considered average because of what happened the next two seasons when Indiana in 75 posted that 29-0 perfect regular season record. And then, you know, this is interesting. Obviously, Scott May broke his arm. A lot of people think Indiana would have won that championship in 75 if he hadn't broken his arm. But it certainly wasn't because Benson didn't step up. Against Kentucky in that regional final game, Kent Benson scored 33 points and grabbed 23 rebounds. Now, Indiana fell 92-90, but man, those are some Walt Bellamy-type numbers there from Kent Benson in a huge spot. And of course, he would go on and have a great junior season. Benson was named All-Big Ten as a sophomore and as a junior, as in a senior, and as a senior. And just, again, one of the greatest players to ever play in Indiana history. After his final year at IU in 1977, he was the first player taken in the NBA draft. He played eight NBA seasons for Milwaukee, Detroit, Utah, and Cleveland. And we dedicate this episode of Podcast on the Brink to one of the great Hoosiers of all time, Kent Benson. We tip our caps to you, Kent. Alrighty, and as always, I tip my cap to you, the Podcast on the Brink audience member, for being here. We always appreciate you being here. And we will be back next week with another brand new episode. We hope you'll join us. We'll talk to you then on another brand new episode of Podcast on the Brink.